This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The White House and President Joe Biden just issued a sweeping executive order yesterday morning, and it is quite a beast. So we're not going to go through all of the details, but I did want to show you the original, which is 20,000 words long. But I did take some Cliff's notes, so we'll go over that in just a second. So you can look at the entire executive order here, but then there's also the White House published kind of a high-level overview. But here's my notes. Here's the key takeaways. So first, what you need to know is that there are 19 federal agencies that have received directives because of this executive order, including the Department of Commerce, NIST, which we already knew, the Department of Defense, Department of Energy, Homeland Security, Department of Justice, and the Department of Treasury were the ones that really stood out to me. So one, this is very comprehensive. You rarely see executive orders that are this sweeping that basically involve, I'm not going to say most because I don't know how many federal agencies there are. I think there's over 60. Like the Department of Agriculture, for instance, was not included in this. But some of the big ones, namely the Department of Defense, aka the Pentagon, the entire U.S. military, Homeland Security, Energy, all kinds of agencies were involved in this. So what were they told to do? So the general themes that I saw were, first and foremost, safe, secure, and responsible development of AI across all sectors, including risk management, education, transportation, governance, oversight, et cetera, et cetera. That is pretty boilerplate. That's nothing to write home about. Protecting civil rights, privacy, consumer, and workers. This is where it starts to get interesting. Obviously, protecting civil rights, this is America, we love freedom, yes, go on. Go forth and be prosperous. Privacy, consumers, this again is nothing to write home about. The EU is actually ahead of America, as far as I can tell, with respect to technology and privacy and consumer protection. But worker protection is one of the things that is kind of like, So I was talking to a lot of people about this, and basically, you know me, I am 100% in the camp of post-labor economics. Let's get people out of the workforce so that we can do other stuff. Let's get off of the rat race. Let's get off of the workaholic treadmill. But most people are not there yet. So my reading of this is that basically the president doesn't want to hurt his chances of reelection, so he's not going to lean into post-labor economics. Instead, he's going to make some perfunctory stuff saying, like, let's protect workers. And in America, for my audience that's not in America, one thing that happens every presidential election cycle is they go into coal country and steel country and the Rust Belt, and they're like, we're going to bring jobs back. And it's never happens. Why? Because coal jobs are going away. Why? Because car jobs are going away and steel jobs are going away. But they always make the noises to say, we're going to bring jobs back. Now, I will say that in some cases, we are onshoring jobs, but usually those are jobs that don't go to blue-collar laborers like coal workers. It's going to high-tech workers like chip fabs and solar and that sort of thing. So anyways, still, the fact that the tone is being set at the highest level saying, we're going to protect all of these things is really interesting. Now, where it gets even more interesting, this is where it starts to be something really worth writing home about. Increasing AI innovation and competitiveness, so investments, public-private partnerships, standards, updating intellectual property policy. This is all stuff that I touched on with my Gatto framework, and the Gatto community helped me brainstorm a few months ago. So we're basically seeing, like, getting our entire wish list, our entire Christmas list answered with this one executive order. Because the thing is, you know, let's just pick this apart. Investments. Obviously, the investment in AI is there, but having AI being invested in at the federal level is a good thing. So, you know, there's already been some evidence that, like, you know, the IRS and other federal agencies are starting to use AI. I just did a video yesterday about NASA, which is still a federal agency that is using ChatGPT, which is great. So what we want to see is we want to see this adoption curve accelerate. Now, obviously, you don't want to go at a breakneck pace. You don't want to overly rely on novel technologies that could make mistakes and harm people and so on and so forth. But at the highest level, the highest office in the land is saying, yes, we, you know, this is permission to invest in these technologies, which is good. So that's the first thing that's really worth writing home about. Next is increasing AI expertise and capacity in the federal workforce. So this is very explicitly saying we want AI experts to be working for the U.S. government. Not just saying that we're going to, you know, increase AI competency out in the workforce. It's saying we want to bring it in-house, which to me, this is one of the best pieces of information because, you know, one of the key things that often happens with new technologies is that the federal government just says, okay, well, we'll create an expert advisory board and then mostly ignore them. But in this case, it's saying, no, we want in-house expertise, which is a pretty significant investment. I'm not going to apply because I never, ever want to be a federal employee. But for those in my audience who are good prompt engineers and know this stuff and are looking for jobs, I encourage you to apply. If you're in America, to be a federal employee because the benefits are good, it's stable, and I will vouch for a lot of you, like a lot of you in the audience, come up with really great ideas. I'll make sure to include a link to how to apply. The window for applying is going to close really fast. I think it's November 17th, so you got like 16 days or whatever from the publishing of this video to apply. So get in the door quick. Now, the other thing is coordinating AI efforts across federal agencies via new councils, and I'll enumerate some of these new councils and working groups in a second, but when 19-plus federal agencies are ordered, you're working together on this, that is a level of coordination that we have not seen outside of crisis, right? This is the level of coordination that we haven't seen since, like, World War II and, you know, the Red Scare and that sort of thing. So this is what proactive government looks like. And I know that many of you in my audience are anti-government, and I hear you, and I do agree that power always needs to be scrutinized, which is why I'm making this video, so that you are more aware of what the government is doing. And then finally, advancing international collaboration. So this was layer six of the Gatto framework, which is international cooperation. So it's still focused on AI standards and risk management. They're still not doing international research. This is the one thing on my wish list that I have not seen anyone talking about, and that is I want to see international, if not global, cooperation on AI research, not just guardrails, not just regulation, not just watchdogs. I want to see research. Positive research that is open source and global. Now, obviously, I understand that there are reasons not to do that because AI can be weaponized, so you don't necessarily want to just, you know, open Pandora's box there. But still, I think that it would behoove us to explicitly say this is a transformative technology that is on the scale of nuclear fusion and everything else that, like, we need to invest in this on an international level. Now, last bit is I want to talk about some of those new entities that are created. So notably missing from this, and this is what some people asked for, was to create a cabinet-level agency or a new agency. This executive order does not create a new agency, but instead it basically orders all agencies to create new groups and new positions within those agencies in order to basically tackle AI. So first and foremost, the White House Artificial Intelligence Council. So this is reports directly to the president and the deputy chief of staff. So this is basically a high level expert group that works directly with the highest office in the land. So this is good. I don't know who it's going to be in there. Obviously, if it gets contaminated with, you know, corporate interests and lobbyists, that could be bad. But I get the sense that they're not going to do that. So the other one is the chief artificial intelligence officers to be designated within each federal agency. So basically, they're creating a new C-level position for each agency listed, which is basically creating someone who is at the top of the food chain who is responsible for artificial intelligence. So this is alongside what you might think of as a chief technology officer or a chief information security officer. So now there's going to be a CAIO, chief AI officer, which honestly, I would, for all of you business people out there, all of you entrepreneurs and CEOs, I would recommend that all companies do this too. When I was still doing consulting, basically I recommended that some of my clients at least appoint a senior VP level person who is head of AI. But having a C-level person who is head of AI, definitely on board with that. So next up is internal AI governance boards. So this is basically like a governance board is like a board of advisors, but they often have a little bit more teeth. And so these are the people who often select the officers, if I understand it correctly. But they're the ones who basically say, okay, this is the person that we need on this council. This is the person that we need as the chief AI officer. So you have like the watcher, who watches the watchers, basically. Yeah. Anyways, creating new boards. HHS AI Task Force. So this is a task force specifically for augmenting health and human services. So this is going to be fall under Department of Health, Veterans Affairs, that sorts of thing. So this is actually really interesting to me that they're specifically calling out health and human services to create a new AI task force. And I think the reason is because healthcare is so expensive in America. And so this gives me a lot of hope. If you watched one of my recent videos about my medical intake thing, we have a tremendous opportunity before us to drastically reduce the cost of healthcare in America, because a huge part of it is just ingesting huge amounts of data, making decisions, allocating scarce resources, and an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so if we can use AI to just do cost avoidance, we could greatly lower the cost of healthcare in America. And honestly, one thing that I think is that AI is the death knell for insurance here in America. Most civilized nations don't have the reliance on private health insurance that we do. And so we basically have this entire apparatus in America where you have a management bureau that is middlemen that all they do is they want their cut. And the perverse incentives are insane for health insurance because they're incentivized to collect premiums but not pay them out, which having worked for an insurance company, I used to work for a workers' comp insurance company, I will say that insurance is, in some respects, it's almost like a sham because it's like you collect money on the promise that you'll pay out money when someone needs it, but then you're incentivized to not pay it out or pay out as little as possible. It seems kind of evil. So anyways, that's my getting off my soapbox. An AI safety and security board. So this is an advisory committee to the Homeland Security. So this is really interesting. And it's also not surprising because the DHS here in America is responsible for like monitoring the terrorists or whatever. And so this is going to basically focus on the biological, chemical, nuclear, and other high risk uses that AI can have in terms of weaponizing it. I suspect that all of these groups will be cooperating very closely with other entities such as the CIA, FBI, and NSA. Now, again, I can hear some of you in the audience that are like, oh, great, even more police force, even more erosion of privacy and individual liberty. And I agree, we need to scrutinize this. But at the same time, AI is a force multiplier. It is a big force multiplier. And then finally, AI and Technology Talent Task Force. That's a mouthful. Basically, this is just preparing for, you know, developing AI talent, because until we have AGI that can replace all human labors, human labor and human cognitive labor is going to be the biggest bottleneck, which is one reason that I make this YouTube channel, is to help teach people AI. And then finally, Research Coordination Network to enhance privacy or on privacy enhancing technologies. That sounds very euphemistic, That's almost like, you know, a privacy enhancing technology is probably code for privacy degrading technologies. Anyways, that's that. So you now are aware at a very high level, all of the things that this executive order covers. So moving right along, Andrew Ng came out yesterday or earlier this week, and he said that big, and this is something that I have talked about. So the reason that I'm saying this is because this all goes directly into the narrative. So he said that big tech is using scare tactics to blow up the threat of AI in order to call for stricter regulation. Now, he's kind of, he's more of a minority voice out there. Now, that being said, there are plenty of other people who are more in the like, hey, this has catastrophic potential. And I'm not going to say that I disagree, but one of the biggest things, and if you're a fan of my channel, you will know that I am very skeptical of doomer narratives because, again, if it bleeds, it leads, right? If it's scary, if it's existential, you get attention, you get more social status, and then you get your way. So while I don't fully agree with his position, I am glad that someone more prominent than myself is saying, hey, guys, like, let's be a little bit more reasonable about this and not throw the baby out with the bathwater. So Elon Musk immediately fired back at Andrew Ng saying like, no, like this is bigger than you think. You know, and the jury is still out. Like every time I run a poll about like, where are we going to end up? You know, some people think like we are doomed. Some people think it's going to be good. Most people kind of fall in the middle. That poll generally follows a bell curve where people are like, eh, you know, a little bit better, a little bit worse, whatever. So that's that. So now I wanted to move on to some of my own projects and give you some updates on the ACE framework, the Basher loop, and OpenMurphy. So first is the ACE framework. We, as I mentioned in a recent video, we did unfortunately lose our main team lead, but we have had quite a few people step up. We just welcomed our new architect, and we're going to have a meeting, first team meeting with our new architect later this week, as well as hopefully a few other new team members. But the reason for this video or this thing is a call for participation. So we need a couple more team members here. Let me zoom in a little bit so you can see this. So we have an architect. We have some lead developers stepping up. And some other infrastructure architects stepping in. So now what I realize that we need a product owner or program manager. So this is someone who can basically take over for me, someone who really understands the vision of this project and can participate in all the meetings that I am not able to participate in to basically help steer the whole project, to steer the everything towards the end goal, working with the architect, working with the team leaders, and so on to make sure that the vision stays coherent. Another thing that we need, and we might already have, I've got a few people in the pipeline, but we need a project manager. So someone who's more familiar with Agile and Scrum. And this is going to be someone who works more closely with the developers to ensure that everyone knows what they're doing. And then finally, we could use some more roboticists, electrical engineers, people familiar with fabricating and mechatronics, particularly with humanoid robots. Whether it's a hobby level, you know, one of the first robots that we want to build is going to be, you know, 10, 15, 20 inches tall. And this is going to be for the OpenMurphy project, which I'll go over in just a second. But yeah, so anyone in those categories, again, it's volunteer only. And we do coordinate on Discord. So, you know, if you've got 5 to 10 hours a week to dedicate to this project and you're on Discord, hit me up either on LinkedIn or on the discussion board here on the ACE Framework team. But yeah, we're gonna get it going again, and we're gonna keep it sustainable. Our previous team leader was a bit of a taskmaster and almost burned the team out. So we're gonna slow down and make sure that we can sustain it. Okay, so that's the update on the ACE framework. Let me go back a little bit. All right, and then next we've got the Basher loop. So the Basher loop is the brainstorm, search, hypothesize, refine loop. And I've had a few people do some really good contributions. We had a member of the ACE team help out, and then we had another person submit their own demo. So I just wanted to round out the video by kind of sharing a little bit of updates where we're at with this. So first I'll show you Demo 02. So Demo 02 is a series of Jupyter notebooks, Python notebooks that you can run in Colab. And basically, this is not a full implementation of the Basher loop, But this contributor did a really great job of showing you the whole process of preparing the data one step at a time. So in this first one, he scrapes all of my YouTube videos and shows you the code. So this is really great if you want to learn how to do that. And in step two, he does all the speech to text, and he uses Whisper to render it all in speech to text. So it's really good, and you can see the Whisper chunks here that were transcribed. So that is good. And of course, Whisper is right now state of the art in terms of speech to text. So this is a higher level of transcription than what I had done just pulling from YouTube. Step three is creating a vector database. So this is the data store that we're going to be pulling from. And then finally, step four is just an example of searching that vector database. I think he uses Pinecone here. Yeah, vector store is Pinecone. You could use ChromaDB, which is local. And pretty much all of these vector stores run on the same underpinning technology, the FAISS, the Facebook AI semantic search library. So Pinecone uses that in the background. ChromaDB uses that in the background. As far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong. My info might be out of date. Anyways, so point is, this is a great set of Colab notebooks that you can take a look at to get a better understanding of how to scrape and prepare this data. And then the last thing I wanted to share was I updated my demo, my basic demo that I'm working on. All I did was get the pseudocode, but I think it's still worth sharing. So this is a little bit, here, let's close this. So this is a little bit clearer, because what I realized in looking at the contributions is that people didn't realize that it's actually like a fully nested loop. And so what I did was I went ahead and wrote the pseudocode and added a little bit of to-dos. But so the Bash for Loop is brainstorm, search, hypothesize, refine. So the way that I set it up here is I've got a dedicated function for the Bash for Loop. And all you do is you pass it a query. You'll probably also need to pass it a data source. But again, this is the point of this is just pseudocode. So then you instantiate an all search results list and an all hypotheses list. So what this does is this approximates what spools up in your head when you're doing a Google search or when you're searching for information at the library. Because basically, you need to keep track of everything that you have thought and everything that you have learned along the way. And so then what you do is first, you do a brainstorm. So you brainstorm a bunch of search queries based on the main query and then any search results and hypotheses you already have. So this is where the loop, when you start off, you don't have any prior search results and you don't have any prior hypotheses. So this is what I call a naive search query. So you just say, okay, cool. Let's just do a wild search out into the wild blue yonder and see what we get. And so then what you do is you do the brainstorm. So this is a process where it's like, okay, let's look at the main query. Let's look at all the information we have and come up with some new search queries. Then you go and search, you execute those search queries against your data source, whether that's a ChromaDB or Pinecone or SQL or whatever. So then you get all of that back. Oh, and by the way, I wanted to share a technology that one of my Patreon supporters just told me about, which is Cohere Rerank. So Cohere Rerank is really cool because it uses these semantic technologies to re-rank the search results that you've gotten, and it's really powerful. He created a demo pointed at some of my YouTube videos, and it answers really well. So there'll be a link to that down in the description, I think, if I remember. And if I don't, remind me and I'll add it. next up is, so that's the search. So basically you say, okay, what am I looking for? Let me take a look at my notes and generate some new search queries. Then you accumulate those new search queries. Whoops, go away. And then you hypothesize. So you say, okay, based on the main query, all the data that we've recovered and all of our previous hypotheses, let's generate a new hypothesis. Let's say, okay, let's integrate all this new information and see if we have a new idea. And then finally, the refine step. So the refine step is you could also say like recurse or restart or whatever. But there's two checks. So there's two tests. First is satisficed. So satisficing is a portmanteau of satisfying and sufficing. So basically, this is going to be a semantic function. You know, you call the LLM and you say, let's pass it the main query, the search results, and the hypotheses. And if you have satisficed the query, if you say, yes, we have arrived at the stage of good enough So then we can just return the results and the hypotheses, and you will know that the search results and then the final hypothesis is the most accurate one. And then finally, the last test is exhausted. And so in this case, you might have done as much searching as you can, and there's just no more information to be foraged. And so if you have exhausted your foraging grounds, then you don't want to just keep looping forever. So either one of these tests will exit the Basher loop. And then finally, it goes back to the main loop where you return the evidence and the hypotheses, and you render a final answer. Now, this is all pseudocode. So if anyone wants to jump in and help me flesh this out, please do so, because I am ultra busy. I have 4 books that I'm working on, plus a bunch of teams that I'm running and research that I'm doing on the side. So I don't have time to finish this. All right. Thanks for watching. I hope you got a lot out of this. Cheers, like, subscribe, et cetera, et cetera. You know the drill. And I hope to see more of you on Discord. We are almost at a community of 700 people. Conversations are getting really interesting, and it's actually at a tipping point where I can't keep up with all the conversations. That's why I have a second tier on Patreon gives you access to dedicated channels so that I will see your questions and make sure that I answer them. All right. Dave out. Cheers.